What's up and welcome in. It is My Guys in the Desert here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. I'm Jonathan Von Tobel, filling in for Danielle Avari, who is filling in for Matt Eumanns, who is usually on this show, but is filling in on Follow the Money. Aaron Renning's alongside today. I am going to set the yes at like minus 500. I'm going to call this show something that it's not, because I've been on like six different shows in the last week.
You're
or so.
The great utility man. I was trying to think of a nickname for you, like Sean Figgins. Are you the Sean Figgins of VSiN?
I like it. Maybe. That could potentially be it. I will take it. So let's talk. Look, our wheelhouse NBA, we're going to get a lot of the association in today. We had some interesting results yesterday. The more fascinating one for me is Clippers and Jazz, but I wanted to start with a series that has taken on a weird flow, and that would be the Milwaukee and Brooklyn series that we saw yesterday, of course.
You call that flow?
I guess. Well, I mean, I feel like all these old guys were like back there, like, that's what I'm looking for, right? You know, like 86 to 83, that's how it was back in my day. Now, back in the day, there were a lot more post-ups and hook shots and I think a little bit more elegant offense, not just jacking up jumpers. So, ER yesterday, an 86 to 83 final. The Bucks get one. Finally in this series, so they get it at home. The classic team down 2-0 going back home, putting in, I guess, a better performance overall. Here's what I wanted to start with. What have you seen from them offensively? Because now this is the second consecutive game in which they've been held to under 90 points. For the series, they have been held to under a point per possession. An offensive rating in terms of individual games, no higher than one flat, and that was in game one. I think, you know, it's funny, a lot of people were like, this Nets defense. They've done a decent job up to this point. And, you know, a lot of it is Milwaukee and their decision-making, but the Bucks offense versus the Nets defense, what have you seen?
I mean, where do you start? Where do you end? If you would have told me when I was talking to you yesterday that the Bucks would score 86 points, I would have said, this series is over. 3-0, book it. But crazy. I mean, this was the Nets offense that, and of course, without James Harden, you have to remember that 88 offensive rating yesterday, 83 points, obviously. You just kind of shocked by it because it was the indestructible force as it was. But as they go on the road here, and you have to give some credit here to the Bucks defense because it's not going to be offense for the Bucks at this point. Giannis missed the memo, 1 of 8 from three-point land yesterday. The free throws, the 10-second call on the free throws, he's oblivious to it all. But you know, the Bucks are still there. I mean, I don't think it's again, when you think about it, the last 2 minutes, the last 5 minutes of the game, it's just hard to think that the Bucks would be able to win this series outscoring the Nets.
Mm-hmm. When you look at this from a decision-making standpoint, yesterday, it gives you really no hope for the offense for Milwaukee going forward because, and it's not just Giannis, but he is kind of a microcosm of this offense overall. The love for contested jump shots for Milwaukee and where this came from, right, in terms of this offense, I think is incredible to me because you mentioned the fact that Giannis has taken 8 3-point attempts in a game is absolutely beyond me. It's insane. And there's the thing with the free throws, too. You saw him yesterday quiet the crowd, try to get a practice shot in on the free throws. There is something, like, it is so weird to watch what he has kind of become in this series, right? I mean, in the last series, we saw a little bit of it, not so much, though, because it was an overwhelming, a team that you could overwhelm, for the most part, if you're the Milwaukee Bucks. Well, but this time around, it's insane, the passive nature of him and this team.
You know, the Bucks, what, 19% from three-point land, 20 of 88 now from the series. And, you know, that's just it. If you're game planning, if you want to beat the Nets, it would seem that you want to bully them, take the ball to the rim. They are a little bit soft inside, or you would think that's where you'd beat this team. So, yes, the game plan, it's just very odd and curious to think. But as I've said, you know, P.J. Tucker, Giannis on the floor, the Nets can pack it in, and that's where they've been able to, I guess, thrive defensively against this Bucks team.
And you kind of alluded to it there, 83 points for the Brooklyn Nets and still an opportunity to tie and win the game at the end of this. It was absolutely nuts. And here's the thing, too, about this contest. You and I talked a little bit about this on the podcast. But so I was on the side of Brooklyn yesterday for the full game at 3.5. And look at the way this swings now for game four. Nets a 1-point favorite on the road. Mm-hmm. If anything, that tells you, right, if you need a lesson in terms of power rating, game-to-game basis, all this stuff, how much was baked into it, a team down 2-0 going back down home? Yeah, that's the lesson right there, right? You were a 3.5-point favorite in Game 3. Now you're a 1-point dog because the situation is not the same as it was in Game
Absolutely.
3.
I mean, that pretty much tells you all you need to know. And of course, James Harden is still going to be questionable, so that would move one way or the other in this matchup.
All right, Aaron Renning with us. We got plenty left to get to here, too, when it comes to this and the series overall, because the Milwaukee Bucks still, I think, are on very thin ice when it comes to this. Yes, 2-1, you win the first game back at home, but it is insane what they have done from an offensive standpoint. It is My Guys in the Desert here in VSIN, the Sports Betting Network. Jonathan Von Tobel, Aaron Renning with you here. Oh, is there an intro? I am doing all these other shows. I have no idea what's going on here. All right. Regardless, Humans isn't here. Danielle's not here. She'll be on Primetime Action later. Humans was on in the morning on Follow the Money. We've got the duty. And in 5 minutes from now, Lou Finicaro is going to be with us. Talk the UFC card 263 coming up this weekend. So let's go to L.A. and Utah. Because last night, the Los Angeles Clippers, I think, kind of let one get away for the most part. I mean, when you are outscored the way that they were from the three-point line, and you still have an opportunity, one, you take the lead in the fourth quarter, and two, it's a single-possession game down the stretch, you got to be able to pull something out. But we see this now, 117-111, another 2-0 series deficit here for the Los Angeles Clippers. Difference is you're going back home this time to the cardboard fans, so we'll see if that helps them out in that regard. What you saw yesterday, because the one thing that I think sticks out to a lot of people, we'll destroy Ty Lue in a little bit, at least the adjustment to go to a zone in the third quarter and cutting that pick and roll out of their offense helped out a lot and allowed you to get back in it, but you got to hit your open shots, and they ended up not doing that yesterday.
I have to go back to you, JV, because all the listeners are dying to hear. Are you worried yet? Are you panicked at all? Are you Kawhi Leonard at all?
No, so I am. I will say the only time that Kawhi Leonard and I have something in common is the fact that even in adversity, like, I have made my decision. My money is in one spot. Until they're eliminated, I picked the Clippers to come out of the Western Conference. So I had somebody on Twitter this morning be like, what about now? Are you worried? And I'm like, they're still alive. Like, if they're still alive, I'm still alive here. So, I mean, look, you don't want to be down 2-0, but you're 2-0 going back home. There are some things that I think regress to the mean for a certain extent. You know, the three-point shooting, I think, can get a lot better, right? You saw that Reggie Jackson, when he's not in foul trouble, has a massive impact on a game like this. So we'll see what happens coming down. But it's obviously not an ideal situation for me or the Clippers.
I'm surprised, JVT, that only one person was asking you on Twitter if that was the case.
I think they're all saving it for when they officially get eliminated.
All right. Well, okay, we go back to game one. Mm-hmm. And you know, I kind of go back to these playoff games, and sometimes, you know, the first half or the whole game one, you just have a lot of flukiness that kind of happens. Teams are kind of feeling each other out. And, of course, Utah Jazz missed 20 shots in a row, did not score a field goal for over 8 minutes. Certainly that was corrected in the second half, and obviously last night as well. 20 of 39, 51%. And of course, the Clippers are the one who are supposed to shoot 40, 45, 50% from three-point land. But to me, I always thought in this series, Gobert. I thought Rudy Gobert was going to be probably, if it was going to be a difference maker for Utah, it was going to be him. Last night, 13 points, 20 rebounds. Underneath was able to kind of control the game, plus 14 from a plus-minus ratio. In that. So to me, that's kind of the difference. I think the Jazz go as Gobert goes in this series. And of course, Donovan Mitchell. And everybody talks about Michael Conley, this, that. And I said, in the playoffs, it's a little different story because, yes, we don't have Mike Conley, but we have more Donovan Mitchell. Right. And he's been unbelievable so far in this series.
Well, and then it gets us into Ty Lue, right, in terms of the dart-throwing nature of his lineups, right? You know, Luke Kennard gets it done for you at the end of the Dallas Mavericks series because there's not anybody else besides Luka Doncic who's going to hunt him in pick-and-roll situations. The second he gets on the court, Donovan Mitchell's doing that, right? Getting lost on defense, playing Ivica Zubac and not really understanding, like, the way to get to Gobert is not to match the size. Mm-hmm. It's play Nick Batum 30-ish minutes and spread the floor and start pelting him with threes, and he's allowing, to a certain extent, because Rudy Gobert's awesome, but to a certain extent, Ty Lue's decisions are allowing Rudy Gobert to have the dominant impact that he's had on this series.
Obviously, that was the catalyst. Yep. That was the catalyst in the Dallas Mavericks series, and we saw them game one. To me, that was really the biggest question in handicapping this series was, were the Clippers going to go small? And they did in game one. And then, they revert back. And you're right. I think Ty Lue has to make his mind up which way he's going to go in this series and stick with something because, obviously, do or die for the Clippers at this point.
And it is amazing. And this is more anecdotal than anything. But It's crazy. He gets crapped on all the time, but Paul George, it is kind of nuts. I mean, he is much better in the second half, much better. He's much more aggressive, getting free throws, all of that. But some of the shot selection and the fact that he misses open threes the way that he does in a lot of these crunch time situations, it is nuts how bad it gets for Paul George. But we'll get back to the association. ER, Jonathan Von Tobel with you here today on My Guys of the Desert. Let's welcome in Lou Finicaro, who is with us right now at Gamblew up on Twitter. Of course, a massive card coming up this weekend, UFC 263. Adesanya and Vittori too. Lou, thank you very much for the time. So let's start with this. I know you are very much a man, and most handicappers are in terms of mixed martial arts and combat sports. You have your eye on these weigh-ins, so I'll ask you, anything stick out from the weigh-ins today, sir?
Relatively uneventful. I should say before we start, thanks for having me on, JVT. Pleasure to share some screen time with ER as well. The weigh-ins went as they should, with most of the fighters on the scale in the first 20 or 25 minutes. What we should note and what we've been waiting for all week was how the Figueiredo results were going to be on the scale. Mm-hmm. He literally stepped on the scale 30 seconds before the end of the weigh-in. So he used the full two-hour period. He was weak, drawn, feeble, and made 125. And his handlers were in extremely near proximity to him. Once they left the room, I was able to attend, so the periphery was available to me. Once they left the room, he looked weak. I'm hoping he makes these ceremonial weigh-ins later today, and I hope he makes the fight tomorrow, because that was the coup de resistance on a bet for Brandon Moreno that we've been waiting to make all week, and I actually committed to yesterday when they had a face-off and Figueiredo shoved Moreno. A certain tell. The kid is cracking. I believe that the 6 months that has transpired since their first fight in December and now, he couldn't help but being champion a little bit, meaning he probably had a sip of wine and an extra cheeseburger. And it told today on the scale. And I think it's going to manifest itself in its performance tomorrow.
All right, so walk us through a little bit more in terms of the detail on the backing, or excuse me, your thoughts in backing Moreno here, because when you watch the first fight, right, majority draw, obviously because of the groin shot there. But when you looked at it, in those later rounds, Moreno really came on because Figueiredo really tailed off. So when you talk about handling this from a handicapping perspective, Lou, do you bet this pre-flop, or do you sit there, do you watch this go on, and then do you go in match and you start to get maybe some bigger plus prices after a potentially hot start for Figueiredo? How do you handle a match like this when you're talking about that?
Yeah, I'm not going to get that cute. Right now, I think that you have a kid in Moreno that's 5-6 years the younger man, 2 inches taller. He has a reach advantage, and he's clearly lighthearted. He's fighting to be the first Mexican champion in the UFC, and the history of fighting and boxing in Mexico is huge. He's fighting in Phoenix around all his countrymen, and it's literally got Figueiredo rattled. I would say run, don't walk, and bet Moreno right now the price is going to drop.
I like it. Yeah, and we have seen a small bump. It was 250 at a couple of spots. Now we're talking about 227 in that range on Figueiredo, so we do see that small move there, but we'll see if as we get closer to fight time if that continues to drop in that direction. All right, so this whole card overall, we'll get to the main event as well, of course, but as we look at the prelims, Lou, and some of the lesser fights that we are going to get into before we get to the main card, what should be in the forefront of people's minds when we look at some of the prelims?
Yes, as we build the low part of the card and move upward, let's start with a fight, Russian Evloev. This is featherweights, 145. He's fighting a Canadian, Hakeem Dawadu. Mm-hmm. This is a wrestler versus striker matchup. Evloev, the Russian, obviously the wrestler, will have advantage if this fight goes to the floor. The Canadian's the much more athletic, deft-moving striker. He'll have advantage standing up. I believe it stays standing, even though I do feel there'll be some engagement. I believe Dawadu is in a really good position here. He's currently priced 185. That's a plus, of course, at the Circa. And so I would have take a good, strong look at him. Also on the undercard, Eric Anders and Darren Stewart. Interesting to know that these two guys fought just a month or so ago. Fight was canceled And it was canceled on a DQ, or really a no contest is what they called it. The fight was competed at 185, and Stewart has maintained since then that repeated attempts to make 185 have drained him, and he needed the fight at 205. Surprisingly, Anders agreed to that. When Stewart stood on the scale today, he looked ripped at 205. How he ever made a 185 is crazy. But I'm going a long way into saying that I believe Stewart now has advantage at 205. He's going to fight a better fight. In their first fight, Anders went off minus 150 favorite. Now he's a 150 favorite again. But I don't believe that line is taking into consideration what that weight's going to do for Stewart. Sign me up for Stewart plus 125.
I like it. Lou with us. Lou Finicaro, Gamblew up on Twitter. All right, let's go a little further up the card. I think you wrote this one up for Points Spread Weekly. Drew Dober, Brad Riddell. Well, what's the read here? Last time we saw Dober in action, it was a loss. Islam Makhachev got submitted in the third round. So what are we looking at here? Bounce back for Dober or no?
Makhachev's going to submit any lightweight he faces till he gets to maybe Poirier or Gaethje. As far as this fight is concerned, I talked to Dober. Kid's from Nebraska. I'm in Omaha, and it was great to see him. I asked him, are you going to wrestle? Because clearly that's his advantage over the city kickboxing striking coach Brad Riddell. He said no. He wants to put on a show for the people, and he's not going to wrestle. That's a red alert. I'm all over Riddell plus 125. Don't fight a guy at his strength. I think Riddell is very live at plus 125.
I like it. All right. A couple of the fights that have stuck out to me on this card, and get your thoughts. Just some fighters I enjoy watching. I want to get your handicap on it. What about Muhammad and Maya at this point right now? Because we're looking at Muhammad in the range of like a 210, 225 favorite, depending on where you shop. Round prop, depending on where you look, shaded to the over, 2.5 at minus 165. Seems like this is a fight that has go the distance written all over it. But what do you see here?
I see a guy in the interviews that talked about retirement numerous times, and Damian Maya, who's an all-time great grappler and one of the absolute best and a pioneer of the sport. But as much as he talked about it, he tried to convince everybody that he puts it out of his mind. Once that R word enters your vocabulary, it's a bad sign. I think Muhammad is in a good position as a minus 200 favorite, and I would take him.
You think this is one that goes a little bit longer? I mean, these are, I think, what is it? Maya averages about 2.5 takedowns every 15 minutes. You got 1.5, 1.7, I think, for Hamid on the other end. Is this one that just goes to the ground and drags out, or do you think Maya gets finished?
No, I don't think Muhammad wants to take this. This to go to the ground with Maya. That's Maya's only chance. I see this as a stand-up bout, and I would probably lean to the over. It's probably 2.5, or the fight goes to decision more than likely. But Muhammad will do enough to win this fight.
All right, this one's going to, I feel like it's going to be pretty quick. We got a pretty big price here on Leon Edwards. Nate Diaz talking about upwards of 575 here for Leon Edwards. Any way to attack this whatsoever? Is there any value in Nate Diaz, who I think is just a dude who's going to absorb a lot of contact and potentially get finished in a fight like this?
I think you read it really well, JVT. I don't see how Nate's going to be competitive in this fight. The angle I would approach, first of all, you're not going to finish Nate. You could hit him with a sledgehammer and he'll still come at you. However, this is a five-round fight, and fight does not go the distance makes a lot of sense to me, not because I think Edwards can finish him, but because of the scar tissue on Nate. I mean, if you sneeze at him, he opens a six-inch cut. It could easily be stopped on blood like it was with Masvidal, and for that reason, I'd lean that the fight doesn't go to the distance.
Yes, the scar tissue and the fact that he does not mind taking hits is going to be one that is pretty good, and at some shops, you can go fight does not go to the distance, about minus 125, the lowest price I can see right there in a couple of other global books. All right, so we talked a little bit about the co-main event, Moreno and Figueiredo. Really quickly, for those who weren't with us at the top of the hour, recap that very soon, rapidly, Moreno, Figueiredo, and where you're at with that one before we get to the main event.
I think in this particular fight, you've got a kid in Moreno that's peaking, and I think you have a kid in the champion, Deiveson Figueroa, that's feeling a little pressure. I think he's feeling the effects of a tough weight cut, and I think he walks into this fight at a little bit of a disadvantage with a home crowd fully in favor of the young Mexican fighter, Moreno.
All right, and then we go to the main event, Israel Adesanya, Marvin Vettori. These two fought about, 3 years ago? You know, it's funny, I rewatched the fight yesterday. I do not know how you would think that Vettori won that. I thought it was a pretty good first round for Adesanya, good second, and then Vettori came on a little bit stronger in the third. But how have these two changed over the last 3 years, and what are you seeing here, Lou?
I think that Adesanya's fought a higher level of opponent and refined an already savant-like athletic striking repertoire. And I think that Vettori has gotten stronger minded, but not necessarily. He's not improved with wrestling. His feet or footwork have not come around. He still throws haymakers, and I look for this to be a difference in athlete here, a class, world class mixed martial artist against more of a fighter, and I look for Adesanya to win either late stoppage or one-sided decision.
Is there a price that you would say, yeah, okay, a little bit too much here on this Adesanya? Because we see varying prices upwards of 275, as low as we'll call it 240.
No, I'd use it as a parlay or find some, or maybe go to the under 4.5 if you wanted to, if you had an aversion to minus 270. I particularly used him in a parlay with Jack Hermanson from a fight or two back. But again, if that 285 or 275 is not to your liking, toss it in a parlay and expose yourself only to one unit.
Lou Finocchiaro, Gamblew Up on Twitter. Lou, always good to talk to you, especially when it comes to fighting. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, JVT. Good luck to everyone.
Yeah, you got it. Again, Gamblew Up on Twitter. Good card this weekend. Speaking of great sporting events, were you at the hockey game yesterday, York?
I was.
Oh, look at that, huh?
Yeah, speaking of $5 down. Favorites into the next round now. Wow.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that. The good luck charm, as the Vegas Golden Knights win 4 straight, close out the Colorado Avalanche. They move on. You mentioned it. Massive favorite against Montreal. We'll discuss that because we got the semifinals coming up and some big favorites in both of those series. It's coming up next here on My Guys in the Desert. OddsTrader.com studio at South Point Casino. It's My Guys in the Desert. OddsTrader.com. Download the free OddsTrader app right now. Start winning with up to the second info that you need. Yes, my voice is slightly more gruff than Danielle Alvari. She is not here. I am filling in for Danielle on My Guys in the Desert. Humans, of course, on Follow the Money Duty. So you're with me and Aaron Rinning for the next 2 hours. Coming up at the top of the next hour, Scott Miller is going to be with us, great baseball writer and analyst, as we discuss everything going around in Major League Baseball. And very quickly, I think this is current. My screen and internet has not been performing very well at this point, but the Chicago Cubs, bottom of the ninth inning, and this one's over 8-5. Cubs get a win over the St. Louis Cardinals today at home. So with that, we move on. Good luck, charm, The Vegas folks love you. You go to a game, and what happens? VGK closes it out. 4 straight wins for the Vegas Golden Knights in this series, and they move on to the semifinals of the Stanley Cup playoffs. So what'd you say? I mean, look, I think when you looked at this from the standpoint of how this series played out, so I got involved with VGK after game 2. I got him at plus 540 to win this thing.
What?
Yeah. Because if you watched from a period standpoint, some of the 5-on-5 numbers, they were outplaying Colorado. Mm-hmm. Like, they just needed the puck to find the back of the net. And sure enough, it started to find the back of the net. But you see this from ESPN Stats and Info. Avalanche, third team in NHL history to begin a postseason with at least 6 consecutive wins and then lose their next 4. The 99 Red Wings and the 1969 Blues, I know a team you followed very closely back in the day, they're the first President's Trophy winner to do so. It's pretty nuts to collapse in that fashion after what they did to Vegas, especially in game 1.
Right. I think, the big thing, you can forgive, obviously, game 1, where the Knights get blown out. But then the way they lost game 2, overtime, correct? They lose that game. And to come back from that, and what, 540? Good price on that one. And then now, you get 540. Now you got to lay $5 with them on the flip side, which is kind of crazy when you consider that in hockey as part of the betting equation. NBA, you could maybe understand that, but hockey, generally more of an underdog puncher's chance, if you will. That was it. I mean, again, the Knights take a punch. Mm-hmm. They come out, score right away. That's exactly what you want if you're the road team. Maybe get the crowd out of it, et cetera. Again, they punch back, fight. And then they had kind of a slog the rest of the first period. But again, you get into the second and third period, and the Knights pretty much controlled action. Just, I think they just had the one power play. They didn't have a power play for the first two periods. So give them a lot of credit. And, you know, it's always interesting in sports how it goes, JVT, because you go from the hunter to the hunted, if you will. You know, big, huge favorite here. Game starts Monday. Series starts Monday.
Yep, and think about it, too. Because we, you know, the 2-0 series deficit is going to be something you always remember. Remember, they were down 2-1, like late in that third period of game three, and then they come storming back there against Colorado as well. So it looked like it was going to be
game
another
five down 2-0. Right. I mean, just amazing.
Yeah, it was resilience. Yep, it is crazy. So now you get Montreal, who is this has been pretty fascinating in their own right, right? Because they've been sitting back and waiting to see what's going to happen in terms of this series and who they were going to end up playing. But now you mentioned the series price and what has gone up to this point out here in Las Vegas. Very high series price, and you expect it to keep moving maybe in one direction. But we've seen, at least in one market, move a little bit in the opposite. But now minus 455, this is courtesy of DraftKings, plus 350 on the other side of Montreal. And I think it's funny, when you look at what Montreal has done up to this point, just in terms of how you think they got here, a lot of people would think, hey, man, Carey Price, this goaltending, it's been crazy. They dominated the 5-on-5 metrics against Winnipeg, like big time, from an offensive standpoint, like the shot share, expected goals for, high danger chances. So many of those things were in their favor. So I don't think this is like one of those, like, hey, the offense, you got a pretty big edge here. You have an edge, but I think Montreal's being a little underrated in terms of the way they've played offensively.
I mean, obviously, not a hockey expert by any stretch of the imagination. You look at some of those metrics, and that's why it's being bet here. But, you know, you go back, and again, I don't have a lot of hockey betting experience, but you just know value. You have common sense. Many were not giving the Knights much of a chance. It looked like that was correct. Obviously, Colorado, like a $2 favorite, but you know, you can't do this now. It's just such a swing the other way. The buddy I was with at the game last night, we kind of got in, not an argument, but going back and forth. He's like, oh, it's going to be a $6 price. I'm like, no, you can't make it above $4. Yeah. And here we are kind of in the middle. Again, hockey, rarely you see a big favorite like this deep into the playoffs.
Did you guys make up? You guys are good?
Yeah, kind of.
So opening price for game one, Montreal-Vegas. Vegas, 260 across the board. Lowest price right now on my screen, fit 256 over at Circus Sports. Total of 5.5, shaded to the under at $1.20. And you do get game one on Sunday. Islanders and Lightning. Tampa Bay, $2 favorite. Lowest price, about $1.85. That's over at the Wynn, according to my screen, with a total of 5.5. Heavily shaded to the under at about $1.45. The markets do not want to get off those 5.5s. You will see some really big numbers on the unders for a lot of those. All right, we have plenty left to get to, a little bit on Major League Baseball. There's some pitchers and some games out there that I think are definitely worth discussing. We also have the NBA. We mentioned this at the top, but if you weren't with us, the number, I am very, very certain, the number for Game 3 was very incorrect for this Milwaukee and Brooklyn series. The market is telling us that. We might have another instance of that in another one of these games. We'll tell you which one that is. Maybe on the other side. It's My Guys in the Desert. NHL and NBA playoffs are here, and our experts are covering every angle to find betting edges. VSiN hockey expert Andy McNeil, tracking all the NHL action, and the allegedly named senior NBA analyst Jonathan Von Tobel. That would be me. I apparently have all of the hoops insight, so check it out. Experts in the entire VSiN team give you all the tools to make most of every bet on the playoffs, including odds and analysis on every game on VSiN.com and our daily members-only best bet emails. Now is the time to cash in on the playoffs. Sign up for your 10-day free trial at VSiN.com/subscribe. How about that? 10 days free. You can get a good chunk of a series done in there, so you can get some of the insight and move on from that. Aaron Renning is alongside him, Jonathan Von Tobel filling in for Danielle Alvari here on My Guys in the Desert. So, ER, I'll ask you this general question first. Mm-hmm. What does your baseball handicapping look like during the postseason in the NBA? Because mine goes down, for those who are listening.
Actually, well, it was a strange year, obviously, true. Because COVID, the NBA went to middle of May. Usually it goes to middle of April, so had a month. So this is the first year, by far, JVT, the least amount that I've ever done in baseball. So actually now I've had a little bit more time. Mm. and have paid a little bit more attention to Major League Baseball. So I'm trying to get in. Might bet it for a couple of weeks, but I'll go maybe through the All-Star break. So I'm a little bit opposite. I feel like I have a little bit more time to pay attention to baseball, watch the games. And one note on that, JVT, did you see NBA going to tip off October 19th, about 3 months from now? That's kind of crazy.
Yeah, that is weird. And again, like a late finals run and what that means for teams who make really deep runs and whatnot is going to be pretty fascinating. But we get back to normal a little bit with the association.
Right.
So it'll be cool to have that back in October, not all the way until the second to last week of December. So we should note, too, again, for those who didn't, Cubs get the win today 8-5 over the St. Louis Cardinals. They opened up about $1.35 favorite, somewhere in that range, depending on where you shop for your numbers. And they get a solid win here against St. Louis. So as we look at it, and it's a really deep card, and I think there were a couple of games that really stuck out, first of which is Padres and Mets, because you have Blake Snell taking on Jacob DeGrom. One of the lower totals you're going to see on the board overall. I think we said some 5.5s and some 6s out there in terms of this one. Right now, pregame total, 5.5, shaded to the over at $1.20. So you're laying $1.60 here on the New York Mets, one of the larger plus prices you'll see on San Diego most of the season, just given the fact that it's DeGrom on the other side. Is there, in your mind, any way to attack this? Because one thing I just don't like is I actually like this Mets team a lot, and Snell still worries me with the command. It's still been a slight issue for him, and he balances it out with strikeouts. But you're always in a tough situation if you're taking on DeGrom, who doesn't even allow anybody on base, if you're going to give up free runners to the New York Mets.
Great matchup here, JVT. I mean, 5.5 total, Major League Baseball. I mean, that is old school.
And not a doubleheader, right?
Old school, if you will. Nets-Bucks, part two here with the low scoring. But you really can't have any criticism whatsoever for DeGrom. I mean, it's amazing. In his start last Sunday, once again, 100 miles an hour plus, the spin is still there, the ERA. I mean, you cannot find anything.
No foreign substances.
Right. You cannot find anything to go against him. So I won't try to do that. Now, the thing is here with Snell, and rarely are you going to get this kind of a plus price on him, obviously.
Right.
Very good last out, JVT. He said he was determined, had everything under control, maybe attacked hitters a little bit more. So certainly a positive with him. So it's kind of one of those deals, hard to do anything with the five inning here against DeGrom. What's the five inning total here? It must be, I'm sure it's three heavily.
Gotta be, yeah.
Right. And anyway, so didn't go anywhere with this one. But, I mean, I have to say it, if I'm going to look to bet, I'm going to probably lean here towards Snell at a big plus price.
Yeah, and that was the way that I was looking at it, just because of everything you mentioned in terms of what you're getting at with Snell and the price. And it's the Padres in general, right? Like the way that this team has been playing and the way that they're power rated by the market, it is very rare where you're going to find a situation you're getting anything above, what would you say, plus 130 on a team like this in most situations overall.
Great point.
Let's see. So William Hill, first five total, we're talking about 2.5 shaded to the over to $1.30.
Really? I was going to say, I didn't know if they could make it 2.5, but obviously they did. Wow.
That's
I don't remember seeing that.
So let me ask you, in terms of your process, I'm big on the numbers and a lot of the analytics and a lot of these sports. I like to look at a lot of the stuff that Fangraphs offers, the delta between the ERA, the expected fielding independent, and finding some discrepancies there. What's your basic process for looking at some of these pitchers? Because there's one guy that sticks out today to me that I don't want to throw at you, but what's your process?
I'm always very pitching heavy, which maybe isn't the best thing to do in Major League Baseball at this point, because we know that, guys are pulled. So I always kind of bet the five inning. I think baseball is such a random thing. I'll get involved with team totals, five inning games, total sides, whatever, to kind of take out that randomness. But with that said, JVT, very starting pitching heavy. I am.
So, and that's the starting pitching heavy, mainly first fives is the way I'll go for the most part. And so today, and this isn't surprising given that the Seattle Mariners aren't a very great team. Their lineup has struggled a lot. There's a lot of young talent there. But the guy that has stuck out to me, if you look at some of the numbers for Justin Dunn, the underlying metrics for him, I think there is something troubling for the most part when you look at what he has done up to this point. On the surface, looks great, right? 3.18 ERA, 1.19 whip, really solid across the board. But then you look at some of the other stuff. The command is clearly an issue, walking over five guys every nine innings, and he doesn't balance that out with the strikeouts at all, only 8.9 strikeouts every nine innings, so that's going to be a problem. So not only do you give up the guys in terms of the base runners, but he's also got ER on top of not striking guys out. I'll generally look for guys that, okay, if you're going to do that, at least induce some ground outs, get your guys involved in terms of your defense. He's not. He is strictly a fly ball pitcher who gives up some good hard contact. Like, it does seem like there is some pretty hard regression coming here for a guy like him. And we've seen the market move a little bit in this regard. Cleveland opened up $1.50. We're up to like $1.58 to some spots $1.60. I expected the market move in that direction, but I think like Cleveland was one that I circled immediately that might be worth laying a price of about $1.50 given everything you see with the other side.
You know, interesting, JVT, because Dunn, I've actually bet Dunn in Seattle quite a bit this year, and I was really being kind of proactive with him because he worked really super hard in the offseason. He thought he was out of shape, etc., dropped some weight, added about 2-3 miles an hour on his fastball. And, you know, you watch him pitch and you see that sense where he's got it all together for 2-3 innings. But you're right, he kind of has that flow. He doesn't is not able to kind of work deep into games. He seems to tire out once you get to the fifth, sixth inning or whatever. He has a bad inning, is what I'm trying to say. So now I would say, yes, I backed him. I haven't really made any money on him. You can see the signs. He just has not been able to turn the corner. And now, you know, the metrics, can he turn those around? That's the big question here. He's had the stuff. The stuff has been much better so far this year. So I kind of questioned it. I'm not ready to go against him, but I understand where you're coming from.
You're smelling
from
what I'm stepping in, at least.
Right.
Yeah, for sure. And look, in 45-ish innings, not the largest sample size either, but regardless, it seems to be that there is something there in the market moving in that direction. All right, we'll get back to baseball. There's plenty of other games. When we come back, though, you know, I mentioned, hey, incorrect line of that Bucks and Nets game. We might have another situation. We will talk about that. We have two games later today. I'm involved in one of those series after game one, so we'll see if maybe the Philadelphia 76ers, who have been awesome in the second half of this series, not so great in the first half, can maybe complete a complete game together. But it's my guys in the desert here on VSIN ER and JVT filling in for everybody on the show. My guys in the desert, Jimmy Vaccaro swinging by. I'm supposed to be a professional here. From the OddsTrader.com studio at the South Point Casino, OddsTrader.com. Download the free OddsTrader app right now. Start winning with up to the second info that you need. Always fun when Jimmy swings in for like 5 seconds. He likes my jacket, apparently.
He's giving you the GQ JVT. Well, you don't have anything on Wes Reynolds. Wes Reynolds has really been styling.
Dude, really? Okay, we should spend like 5 seconds on this because I've noticed when I tune in every once in a while, like the Mr. Rogers-esque like variety of jackets and colors that this man has in his arsenal is insane.
I thought, you know, when I saw him from his vacation at the back home in Indiana, in Indianapolis 500, thought he had a new makeover. Looked like a totally different guy.
Well, he did get the sunburn out there, too. Somebody got to tell him they get the SPF up a little bit. But, Wes, you are styling, so don't take that as we are complimenting you, Wes Reynolds. I'm just going to get that very clear. All right, association. So, tease this a couple times. Let's discuss this from a, you know, tracking the market, all these sort of things. It is always really fascinating. So, we'll use this to build onto the bigger topic. So, yesterday, the Milwaukee Bucks. They are back down. They're back home. They're down 2-0. And they are laying 3.5 for the game there against the Brooklyn Nets. Now, I personally, you and I talked about it on the Hardwood Handicappers podcast, wherever you get your podcast, that I kind of figured that this should actually be closer to pick Brooklyn -1, somewhere in that range. Now, Brooklyn ultimately covers the 3.5 because they lose by 3. That's how that works. But then you get the opener after losing the game. You get the open for game 4, no major injuries, nothing has changed other than a result. Brooklyn a 1-point favorite on the road. So now if that is not a lesson for anybody out there that when you're looking at some of these numbers for teams in these series that are down 2-0 going back home, that those are just loaded to the gills in terms of the tax that you're paying, like I don't know what better example to set for you.
It's a great point. Obviously the word is out, the trend is out, and we're talking about all these games. Essentially if you're down 0-2 and you're coming home, you're going to be favored by, you're going to be favored by that in the first half, maybe more. We can talk about that with the couple games upcoming. But, yeah, it's the right read. Again, James Harden, we still don't know the status with him. If I'm a guessing man, a betting man, I'm going to say he's not going to play.
Yep.
I would think game 5, maybe he's – I think until the Nets are kind of backs to the wall, obviously, if they come back and they win on Sunday, they're up 3-1, probably doesn't play again. If it's 2-2, James Harden might be back inside this series. So, you know, as far as betting the series, betting the games, it always does make it a little bit tricky. I'll say this, JVT. The one thing I'm a little bit surprised with is the Nets' pace. Yep. They have played slow.
Yep.
They have played slow really throughout the playoffs. Now, some of that is they had big leads against Boston, et cetera. And I thought without James Harden, because if you watch Harden play the point guard, he can bog that game down, take essentially the whole or much of the shot clock. I thought they would play a little bit faster. It just hasn't happened so far in these two games without him, three games really without him.
Yeah, but the in the postseason, about 97 possessions per game for Brooklyn, and then you look at this series, it's still right around there, about 98.5 something, but this is a team that was like well into the hundreds.
Yeah, I mean, and the Bucks are always a team that plays fast, and they haven't played fast really the last couple of games as well, which again doesn't make sense. Budenholzer, you know, why you're not going to play fast with this Milwaukee team, because you know they're going to struggle in the half court of things. So, yeah, just another mark against Budenholzer. But, and you know, obviously we're going to swing back. We got an early game on Sunday. Total of the first game, like 240. Mm-hmm. Now we get about a 10, 11 point adjustment on that total here for game four.
So, we use this to kind of build like on the bigger topic, right? So we talk about teams down 2-0, the tax that you as a bettor are paying in those situations. You know, it's funny, you always hear that, right? It's like, man, down 2-0, that's a great angle. Like, yes, but if I always say it, if you know it, they know it, and, right? And like, and it's factored into a number in a very big way. So you have that lesson there. So let's spin this forward to a team that is down 2-0 going back home, and that would be the Denver Nuggets taking on the Phoenix Suns. And I find this pretty fascinating from a couple of different reasons, right? So the Nuggets are up to a 2-point favorite here. If we are just taking this at face value, the market is telling, because remember, in the games that they played at Denver against Portland, it was the identical situation, mm-hmm. 1.5, 2, depending on the game and everything like that. Do you power rate Phoenix and Portland as the same team across the board? Because I don't. I think Phoenix is a better team. Thus, at the very least, this number should not be 2. I thought Phoenix should be about a 1-1.5 point favorite in this situation.
Great comparison, actually. That's a really good take on that, because you're right. That's where it's priced at. And, you know, Portland got a lot of love in that first-round series. Yep. I didn't quite understand it. I had Portland rated really high because you had to have them rated relatively high because they finished the season so strong. The last 2 weeks, they were kind of in playoff mode. But you do, kind of like the New York Knicks, they probably weren't going to be able to get to that next level, where the Phoenix Suns are certainly showing you that right now.
Correct.
Boy, what a tight, together team defensively. Really impressed with what they were able to do. But you know, a couple different things here. Go back to last night. You talk about paying a tax on the first half. Milwaukee was essentially open -2, maybe 2.5 on that first half. Closed 3. I don't know if there was any 3.5s. What does it do? Land 3.
Yep.
Here, once again, JVT, Denver favored by 2 in the game. I see on the way in today before I left, I saw Denver as high as 3 in the first half. It's great. And what kind of tax you are paying, I think it's kind of that similar situation. Now, if Denver goes on to win this game, mm-hmm. you're probably going to see Phoenix a favorite in game four.
Yep, 100%. I mean, look, even if they lose, we just saw with Milwaukee and Brooklyn, they, you might just see that flip regardless, because everything is baked into a situation like this at this point right now. So, and you see this too in terms of some of the series prices and everything where the series stands over at DraftKings. Suns, a very, very sizable favorite in the series.
So you didn't bet this game?
No, I did. The game itself, I have the Suns money line, +114 over at Circa. Like, to me, there's enough value there, right? I think they should be favored in this. I'll take a +114 money line price on Phoenix in this situation.
I think you and I will be going against each other. Yep. I got to come back here with Denver. Obviously, very simple. You have the now the reigning, I guess you could say, MVP. Still should be the best player in this series. Has not played well. Played a little bit better in game two. The rest of the Nuggets, abysmal. Quit. Michael Malone said they quit. Whenever I see that, Michael Malone, generally when he comes out very hard on his team, they have responded all season long. So I'm going to bet that they respond here. Home court seem to be getting stronger and stronger as the playoffs build. So I got to trust the spot, as Matt Eumanns would say. I'm going to be on the Nuggets.
That's right. Matt Eumanns says a lot of things, right? Doesn't like King Cobras and broccoli. Don't ask bad teams to do good things for you. I have pushed him to make a book of Eumannisms, but he has not really taken me up on that offer yet. I'll write it. Small fee. All right, let's move on to the next game then. Philly and Atlanta. Right now for the game, Philly, and this is a little bit more in line with what it should be. Philadelphia, 1.5 point favorite on the road here against the Hawks. Total of 224.5. I think there's an argument to be made that potentially Philly could be a little bit higher in terms of their power rating. But Atlanta, I think you have to upgrade them for the way they've played at home since McMillan has taken over. They've only have one loss. I think they have only three failed covers over that stretch at home since McMillan has been their head coach. So this is, it seems like, a pretty good situation for Atlanta just because of the way that they play. But ER, what I can't get out of my head is a negative 32 net rating in the second half of these games in this series. Mm-hmm. And the way that in this game, game two, Philly seemed to figure something out defensively mm-hmm. with, you know, sharing the defensive possessions between Matisse Thybulle and Ben Simmons on Trae Young.
Exactly. I did not do anything in this game. Yeah. Kind of as you mentioned, I tried to make a case here for the Hawks. The fact that Hunter's going to be out here for the duration here for Atlanta probably put me off a little bit. And, you know, it's the underdog. And, again, with this price, you're asking them to win. Mm-hmm. I wish, you know, maybe you're getting 4 or 5 points, et cetera, so they don't exactly have to win. They have to win the game here, obviously, to essentially cover the spread. You're right. Trae Young, the head of the snake, mm-hmm. if you will. That was the matchup in this series. Philadelphia seemed to have answers for him, whether it's Ben Simmons, whether it's Thybulle, certainly not Danny Green, as we right. saw in the first game. Now, and with that handicap, to me, that is the key, and we've seen that Simmons is able to do that. Now, on the road, does Trae Young get the whistle here? Does he get these guys into foul trouble? If you're live betting that, I think that's very crucial to watch and look forward to that, because both these teams draw a lot of fouls. Both teams get to the free throw line a ton here. So I think that's kind of what you want to see and what you want to watch early in this game if you are going to get involved eventually here.
And I think the other side, too, for Philly offensively, I think we're done. It's funny, going into game two, I thought I had missed an Embiid injury because there was a lot of, hey, day-to-day, we don't know what's going on with Embiid. I'm like, he played 38 minutes in the first game. Right. He dropped 40 points on him. I think he's going to be fine. 39 in that one. So through two games at this point, 39.5 points, 54% shooting, 11 rebounds per game. It's pretty safe to say they have no answer for Joel Embiid on the defensive end, right? No way to stop him. But you and I talked about this the other day. Mm-hmm. A potential wrinkle that you think we might see here is more small ball, right?
Well, I don't know if we're going to see it, but I would like to see it. Yeah. I mean, if you're watching this series, I mean, Joel Embiid has dominated so far. 76 points combined. Capella, no real answers here for what you're going to do. In fact, with Capella on the court, 28 minutes, minus 25. Plus minus ratio. So I think it's at least intriguing that maybe you start Gallinari or at least give him some more minutes. Again, whether it's him at the five or Collins at the four, those two at the 4-5. But the thinking here is put four shooters around Trae Young. I mean, that offense is dangerous enough as it is, let alone put another shooter. Make Embiid come out of the paint and play with some pace. And obviously work him, get him up and down the court to perhaps tire him out, because that's the only person that's going to beat Joel Embiid in this series is probably Joel Embiid right. as far as his health, conditioning, et cetera. Doesn't seem like, again, you're going to have many answers for him defensively.
Yeah, so you might as well go small, get roasted again inside, but at least you're trading threes for twos for the most part.
Yeah.
And that could help you out. And they do have a history in terms of the Hawks with this small ball lineup. You mentioned John Collins, usually their small ball center, Danilo Gallinari playing that for a net rating in those possessions, according to Cleaning the Glass, of about plus 24. So that's a really effective lineup in terms of what you could put out there from an offensive standpoint. And like you said, who cares? We're getting roasted either way.
Right.
But let's start shooting over the top of them and force them on that bum knee to kind of rush out and close out on shooters.
I mean, the Clippers went to that small ball kind of catalyst for them in that Dallas series. It's yep. just the nature of the NBA right now. Like you say, rather have threes than twos.
Yep. All right. Second hour of My Guys in the Desert is on the way. Scott Miller is going to be with us at the top of the next hour. Of course, Series 6M. MLB Network, and a contributor over at Bailey Sports San Diego. We'll talk a lot about, of course, very big matchup, Padres and Mets, coming up later today, DeGrom versus Snell. We'll also have a little bit more on the NBA from some of these series and futures perspective. You know, you get a lot of the questions like, hey, where's the value on the futures board? Maybe not so much on the futures board itself, but maybe some other ways to attack it. It's My Guys of the Desert here on VSiN.